Blog Talk Radio. So welcome to Spec Talk Radio. This is your host, Karen Rands. I've been the host for the Spec Talk Radio since early last year when we launched the Southeast Private Equity Conference. Our next Southeast Private Equity Conference is on April 14th and 15th. So that's where Spec Talk Radio comes from. It's where the Southeast Private Equity community comes together to learn how to create wealth through entrepreneurship and making growing successful companies and through angel investors and other sources of capital, connecting with those companies and helping them succeed. And so today we have a very interesting topic because we are talking about, is there any money out there? When I did a blog on this on our blog space, entrepreneurblogspace.com, because it's a question that just keeps coming up, of course, in our days, our economy today. And it makes me want to sing the Pink Floyd song. Is there any money out there? So that's my little tongue-in-cheek, a little humor for them for this Friday. I just came back from New York City. I was up there for the New York Private Equity Forum. And I can say, at least from that particular event's perspective, you wouldn't know that there was any kind of something going on with the economy. There were great companies there pitching their opportunities or networking with the investors. There were a lot of investors there, a lot of investment banks, angel funds, venture funds, various sources of capital that were there looking for these deals, looking to try to help them get money or invest in them and doing the due diligence. And there's about 300 folks in attendance. And with our event coming up in about 5 or 6 weeks, we're expecting to have a lot of those folks said they would be coming to our event as well. So it's going to be a great event for down here in Atlanta. You can get all the information about that at seprivateequity.org. So today we're going to cover this topic in two ways. We're going to first talk about finding the sources. There's two challenges out there. One is finding the sources of capital. And the second is in convincing them that you as an entrepreneur are better than all the other things that they're looking at. Okay, so we're going to, first part of the show is going to be talking about finding the sources. And then the second part is going to be talking about how do you convince them that you're the best opportunity for them to invest in. According to the National Venture Capital Association, in 2008, 3,808 ventures raised VC funding totaling about $28 billion. According to the Center for Venture Research out of New Hampshire, 70,000 early-stage ventures were funded by angel investors last year, totaling $37.2 billion. And what's remarkable about this is that this was supposed to be when the recession had officially begun. I mean, we saw it within our own investor community where they started to sort of retrench back in March of last year. We still had a great Southeast Private Equity Conference for our first conference, but we were very worried about it at that time. And so we saw an uptick in activity in December with November and December with a lot more investors getting engaged, a lot more due diligence happening. And companies had raised money out of the spec event last year, and most of our investors had reinvested in deals or just did minor deals as far as the angels go with the companies that were coming through the Network of Business Angels and Investors Forum. And then we saw an uptick at the end of the year, almost like investors said, because the really sophisticated investors kind of knew the market was getting funky last year. And the ones that are the kind that actually make angel investment, they're at the top of that pyramid of investor sophistication. They had they started pulling their money out of the market back then. And so I think a lot of them were sort of sitting on the sidelines saying, you know, I'm tired of making 2% on my money, and so I'm going to get back in the game and look on creating a multiple on my money to get a return on it. And so that's why we saw the uptick in November and December and then on in through the first part of this year. So you have to keep in mind about all of the private equity type of investments, the angel investors as well as the venture capital, they're being very judicious. They have the money. but they're being very judicious right now because they are not sure what's going to happen over the next 90 days to the next 6 months. So that goes when we get into our second part of this session on, so when you're in front of somebody who has the money, how do you get them to release it? So let's talk about finding the sources. So if you're an early stage company, and how we define an early stage company, this is when you're beyond the startup stage. We're not really, I do a whole segment, a webinar on how to pitch investors, and I talk about raising your seed money and your first round and all that kind of stuff. We're not really talking about that. We're talking about those companies that have done a friends and family round or put a significant amount of their own money in, and they've got their product developed. They're either in the market or about to be in the market. They're doing the final stages of commercialization, or they're actually in the market starting to sell it. So they're at early stage. They've got a company formed. They've got a team of people that can execute. They're, you know, rolling. They're down the path and ready to go. And all they need is the capital to really take them to that next level, get them to cash flow positive, you know, get them to the point where they can increase the valuation of their company significantly to go to venture capital firms, or they're at the tail end of their angel round and starting to court the venture capital firms, or some early stage venture capital firms are participating in the latter part of the angel round. So first thing you have to do is, in this economy and where we are right now, the first thing you've got to do, if you haven't done it already, if you've done some of it, you got to go back to it, and that's work your Rolodex. You got to be bold, okay? You can't just assume that the answer is going to be no, because you'll be surprised at who has the money. You know, people aren't flaunting that they've got the money to go out and invest in this stuff, but they are looking at deals. They're looking at things that they want to invest in. There was I did an interview a few months back with the author of Fool's Gold. And one of the things you can see it on the show, on Blog Talk Radio, you can go back and listen to it. But one of the things that came out of that particular interview and in his book was that a good portion of this 70,000 ventures that get funded got funded through people that you would not expect to be angel investors. They're not necessarily part of a angel investor group, but there's somebody that gets somehow connected to the entrepreneur, either because of their love of the product and their belief in the vision of where the company's going to go, or they have a direct relationship or one degree separated relationship with the entrepreneur or the CEO. And so what you got to do is just ask the question, and what will happen is that your doors will be opened, okay? Because if that person doesn't have the money, but or they're not in a position to invest at this time, but they like what you're doing, they're going to become an advocate for you, and then they're going to turn around and maybe open doors, make introductions to other people for you, or help you in some way. So first thing you got to do is work your Rolodex very hard and work your advisor's Rolodexes and work everybody on your team's Rolodex. Everybody's got it, and this is not just people that you've talked to in the last 90 days or you met in the last 6 months. This is reaching out to old college friends, old colleagues from work, you know, neighbors of your parents. I mean, it's really working your contact list. And why do you want to do that? Well, the reason why you want to do that is because, first of all, it doesn't cost anything to do that. All it costs you is time and maybe some gas money and, you know, a couple dollars for coffee, okay? You can work at that part of it, and you can raise money through an affinity group without paying a lot of money to do that. The second thing that if you've got 50 or 100 through that process that you've talked to, then it's going to open up doors to other people. So it's that one degree separation. I mentioned that before, but you can't take that for granted. It's every time you sit down with somebody and you take them through what you're doing, and it may or may not be from them, and you say, well, who do you know? Who do you know that it might be interested in this? Who can you introduce me to? Who can I go have a cup of coffee? Can we call them now? Okay. And the third thing is that it's a litmus test for the other investors, because when you start to get to the kind of investors we're going to talk about for the second part of this, when you get to those objective investors, people that are in the business of investing that are strangers to you, they want to know that you have the ability to raise some funds. I was having a conversation with an investor banker about this last night. And, you know, and we'll talk about it as you get in front of different angel groups as one of your approaches to getting capital, but You know, they want to know that you have the ability to raise capital from within your circle. Because if you don't, it's for two reasons. Number one, you either don't have enough guts, and therefore you don't have enough guts to ask for the order, so to speak, for, you know, selling equity in your company, and therefore you don't have enough guts to actually build this company to be a multi-million dollar company. Or number two, you lack belief enough in your product or in your company that you can actually do it, and are as kind of part of that, or else that I guess the third reason is those people must know something about you that this investor doesn't know because this investor just met you. So none of those are good. And, you know, but that's a hidden litmus test that objective investors use. So you should be able to raise $100,000, $200,000. You don't have to raise a lot of money that way. You just got to prime your pump, get your offering rolling with that, and show that you have the ability to articulate your vision to the people that you know so that they'll throw $10,000, $15,000, $20,000 in, and you can get 10 of them to do it to get the $100,000 of, or, you know, 10 of them to get to $200,000, depending on, you know, how much they're putting in. And the other thing is it's the easiest money you'll ever raise. It'll be the easiest money, other than the fact that it takes time to do it, but it's going to take time to raise money anyway. But at least these people like you, okay? At least these people, they should be cheerleaders for you, wanting you to succeed. And so you really need that. It's huge to be able to work your Rolodex. And there's a lot of folks, a school of thought that says that, you know, people should, and entrepreneurs should not, should be able to raise their full amount, $2 million, $3 million that way. Our experience has been that it's almost impossible to do that unless you've, you know, had a big win in the past. But you definitely can raise a couple hundred thousand dollars doing that way, and it's your balance sheet money. It helps you finish the things you need to do to really make your business solid so that you can kind of take it to that next level. So that's the first thing. You got to work your Rolodex. The second thing you want to do in this day and age of raising capital, you want to plug into every free opportunity to pitch that you can find, okay? Every opportunity there is to pitch your story, you want to do it. Because guess what? Nobody does a terrific, super great presentation to investors the first time. Because you kind of got to get your sea legs with it. You got to know, you know, what are the things. I mean, we coach folks within the Launch Funding Network at LaunchFN. That's one of my companies. I'm the president of Launch Funding Network, launchfn.com. You know, we coach folks on what they need to have in their presentations, and it's amazing how many people ignore what we say, but they do. And just because they've been doing presentations, sales presentations, you know, a good part of their life, and they think they know what they need to say and do, and in reality, they miss the mark. And it's particularly when you get into a paid situation, it's very important. So if you can take an opportunity to pitch at these university competitions, the small business development centers oftentimes have programs and they'll have opportunities for you to pitch. There's organizations that are large networking organizations for entrepreneurs and investors to come together. In Atlanta alone, we have a group called Startup Riot and Startup Lounge. Both of those are organizations that are the proponents of bringing entrepreneurs together and investors together and, you know, not charging very much money, if anything at all, and giving them an opportunity to pitch and get to know each other. And if Atlanta's got two of those, I'm certain that every other major city in the United States has one or more of those types of events. So you need to get in front of those kinds of things. The MIT Forum has opportunities like that. I run a program they call Run It by the Pros. And so there's always opportunities in your own backyard to pitch for free. You just got to pay attention to where they are, get involved with them, and, you know, get practice. And the reason why you want to do that, even if there's not that many investors in the audience, and it may be difficult to, you know, to raise money that way, you get practice. And practice is, you know, in front of an audience is so much different than practicing just in front of your mirror, okay? So you get some practice in front of a live audience of people that can give you feedback. The other thing is that as part of that, you'll gain confidence. It's a confidence booster because almost always they're favorable. They people give you some attaboys. They'll give you a little bit of critiquing and, you know, feedback on it, but In some cases, people give you, I think you should have said this or that, or it would have been nice if you had shared this information. A lot of times they'll have a feedback form, so they'll write in comments and you get those kind of comments. But for the most part, it's a confidence booster, okay? And you need to just make sure that you get to attend as many of those conferences and those kind of things as you can. And then when there's other private equity conferences in your area, attend them as an entrepreneur, even if it's you have to pay to have a table or something there. Attend them so you can learn. Sometimes they'll give you an opportunity to see a presentation, sometimes not, depending on what the rules are and how they're trying to construct it according to the SEC guidelines. But you'll get a real sense of the kind of opportunities and how people are pitching. And they might have, at our Southeast Private Equity Conference, we're doing a pitch workshop. So we'll be given very specific experience in that area. But a lot of times these conferences, I know the Venture Atlanta that does their conference, they let everybody watch the presentation. So it's a great opportunity to learn. When I was first getting started in this business, I went to every one of those kind of events that I could do, and I would take notes. I would write squares out, what was on their the key points that were on there. I would look at the flow of the charts together, the key pieces of information that were on each chart, what they said when they had that chart up, and I would rate them. They did a really great job. I got the understanding of their opportunity, and I would learn on how to do an effective presentation so that I could tell others about that. And I was also, this is back in 2001 when I was trying to learn the industry. And so, you know, that's one of the things that you want to make sure that you plug into those opportunities so that you can learn and get better and better and better. That'll help you when you're doing one-on-ones with potential investors, as well as when you get into more of the sophisticated part of getting capital. So the next thing you want to do is work your angel group circuit, okay? This is go to the Angel Capital Association or do a search. There's a couple of different directories that list angel groups. You can find the angel groups in your area. You got low odds of actually getting into those particular groups just because, and it's not a reflection of your, sometimes it's a reflection of your quality of business, and that's a whole other subject. But assuming that you've got all the fundamentals there, you've got a good product that meets a certain need in the marketplace, you got a team that can execute, and you validate the business by showing some kind of market traction, some sort of outside validation, and you got a competitive advantage, you know, you've got the fundamentals of what a group's going to want to look at. But the reason why it's low odds is because sometimes you're a square peg trying to fit into a round hole, and they may reject you because of your stage of your company, because of the industry that you're in, or the terms of your investment, and it may not be a reflection of your company in and of itself. So don't be discouraged by that, but you've got to take that step, right? And if you do get a chance to pitch at those folks, then you're going to get great practice, okay? Sometimes the early stage venture capital firms, I know I'm always amazed at how some of the premier venture capital firms within Atlanta will take meetings with very early stage companies that we think are even too early stage for our angel investors, and they'll take meetings with them and give them feedback because they're committed to helping entrepreneurs succeed. And so when it may take some time to get on their agenda, but you can go through your presentation with them and they'll give you feedback. So I highly recommend that you do that. That goes back to being bold. You know, go ahead and make those appointments and set those things. And it is an art to raising capital. And so if you can do some of these different things, then you are going to perfect that art and get much, much better at being able to tell your story when it comes time to tell your story in an audience, like in a conference, is what we'll lead into. And so then you get into paid events, okay? Now, before I get into the paid events, the thing that you've got to keep in mind is don't get discouraged. I mean, all the things I talked about takes a lot of time. You're going to get more rejection than you ever imagined, more than you ever got as a high schooler, okay? You're going to get a lot of rejection when it comes to raising capital. And oftentimes, it is not because of your particular business. It's because, which is relevant to the second part of this show, how do you get them to decide on yours? It's compared to the other things that they're looking at. Or there's one piece of your puzzle that just doesn't fit their criteria. And it's in it, but one of the things you always do. One, you get better at telling your story. You get better at conveying the message on the potential return for the investors. And if they like you and they like your message, but you just weren't quite a right fit for them, then they're going to be able to turn around and open up doors for you. So every think of them always as opportunities, either because they will invest or they know somebody that will invest. And so it's very important for you to continue to pursue all of those kinds of things. Okay, so then we get into the paid events. The thing that is a value of a paid event is that, as I mentioned with Angel Group, sometimes, you know, you'll be a round peg in a square hole or a square peg in a round hole, and it, you may not fit it exactly according to may not fit exactly to what their specifications are. When you get into a paid event, chances are you'll have a cross-industry exposure. So the companies that are presenting at that event represent many different industries and many different stages oftentimes, unless it's, you know, very industry-specific type of an event. And then, and also, likewise, the audience is very different. So it is very important for you to sort of get that. There's a real value in that. They come in all shapes and sizes and costs. You know, there's a some of the local small events. Some of the local small events, like the NBA and I event, there's a small fee that you might pay as being a part of that, but that's because of the other consulting services and the other things that LaunchFN provides. Some of the events might have an application fee that you have to pay. Some events, depending on the nature of the event, might have a larger fee. The event I went to up in New York yesterday varied from $1,500 for a table up to $14,000 to be a presenter, depending on how you negotiate your package. The presenters were, you know, range in thousands of dollars. And but there's a very large audience of potential investors that are part of that, and they have a great track record. Our event, you can get all the pricing information on seprivateequity.org. The event coming up in April has a different set of fees. It's less. It's because it's a little bit smaller event, and it's in the Southeast. It's not New York City. So we don't charge quite as much, but there's a lot of value that comes out of that. And so when you're going to a paid event, your big thing that you've got to try to keep in mind is that you are competing against the 20 or 30 or 40 other companies that are part of that event. So why would you want to participate in a paid event like that? Is that you're guaranteed access to a higher caliber of investor, and it often provides you greater exposure than what is in the room. So, like, for example, in our LaunchFN model, one of the reasons why we have the fees that we have for the NBA and I event is because the companies not only get to be in that event, but they get to come back. We call it, kind of describe it as a river of capital. So you're going through this river and trying to pick up capital as you go along, right? And so you got one event, and then you have the possibility to come back and go to another event and get in front of additional investors and come to another event, and it's all kind of part of the package. And you get exposure by being on the website and being a part of the follow-up teleconferences and sending out announcements to the investors as you make progress. And so we do that as part of making sure that you have ongoing exposure to investors. Okay, so that's sort of the LaunchFN model for access to capital. When you do these big events like this, sometimes they'll have links on their website. The Southeast Venture Capital Conference that's going on next week here in Atlanta, they have links on their websites to the companies that are presenting. So you get some exposure for your company that's outside of what happens in the room when you get into some of these big events. And then in today's market, you really have to do whatever it takes to get in front of as many investors as possible, because there is money out there. It's just a little more judicious than it would have been, say, you know, a year ago, okay? you have to know that you got to understand the process of raising capital. It never happens, rarely ever happens. Like if you, even when you participate in an angel investor conference, it rarely happens in that room. It almost always is where there's some follow-up or some due diligence that happens. And almost every angel investor group I know, you know, typically will raise a few hundred thousand for a company, but they rarely raise millions of dollars and put millions of dollars into a company. And it's just the nature of the way angel investor groups work. So you got to be able to syndicate and get in front of other investors at the same time on an ongoing basis. We've developed what we call the Couran theory of private equity investing. And this is based on years and years and years of working with companies. And one of the probably the main reason why companies, entrepreneurs don't succeed in raising capital or raising all the capital that they seek is because they really don't understand this very theory that I'm about to explain. The Couran theory of private equity is that for every one check writer you will have, you'll have actual, you know, somebody strokes a check, you'll have three that you think will write a check. They'll act like it. Oh, this is really great. Let me think about it. Okay, and then you'll have to, but you'll have five times that you have to talk to. So it's 1-3-15. So that means that if you're raising $1 million and you're doing it in $25,000 increments, then you have to have 40 check writers. That means 40 people to actually stroke a check. That means that during the course of raising it, it's probably going to take you a year to raise $1 million, particularly in this market. Plan on it being a year. That's why you got to have a strategy for doing this, because you can, you're if you have a business that is a going concern, it will crumble during that time if you stop everything to go raise money, or you're dependent on raising your money. You need to, you know, so you have to have, get your initial easy money in so you can sustain yourself as you go and raise the rest of your money. Okay, so you'll have 120 that think about it, but that means 600 have to be exposed to it. And most companies don't ever get to 600. They stop at 40 or 50 or 60 because those things I talked about at the beginning of this, they get discouraged. They go to these free events. They, you know, work their Rolodex a little bit. They get discouraged, and they give up on raising capital. And it's really not because their business is not a good business. They maybe haven't figured out how to explain the opportunity well enough yet, or they simply haven't talked to enough investors. We'd be in so part of how you move investors through this process is by making sure that you are getting access to new investors and working the relationship with those, and then moving those that come into your funnel through your funnel to become check writers. And so one of the things that's just always amazing to me is how many times a company will not follow up with investors. Like I went up to this event in New York, and I've been to this event many times, and they have a process where the investors check off which companies that they want to get information from, and they give that list to the companies. And I'll check off maybe 20 companies that I'm interested in getting more information from, because maybe they weren't ones that did presentations or something like that. And or it might be 10 companies like that, and usually maybe only 25% of them follow up with me. You know, they don't. You know, they and I'm just always amazed. They don't even call, okay? And so, so they've paid money to be in this event, and then they don't follow up. And so it's so bizarre to me that companies that will pay to be in an event, if you paid $3,000 for an advertising campaign or a direct mail campaign, and you got 25 solid leads out of that. You'd call them. If people send back a postcard, call me. I'm interested in what you got to say. You'd call them. But for some reason, entrepreneurs get nervous or something. They're afraid. They don't call these guys. And then the second thing is that, so you call them. You call, you've got these reply cards back. You're interested in hearing about your services. You call them, and they weren't in the office at that time. Would you not call them again? No. You keep calling them until they said no, or you got them on the phone, and then you find, maybe you find out that you got two or three that are hot, that are like, yeah, you know, let's set an appointment, I want to learn more, I want to see a demo, whatever it is, right? And then you go and you do that. Would you not call them after that? No. They said, yeah, I'm, you know, my budget's such and such, and this is what I'm planning on making my investment in this kind of a product. So you would keep calling them until they said no. Well, guess what? Investors are exactly the same way. They're big boys and girls. They can say no, and they will say no. So when they've decided to make an investment in something else, or they go, you know, I really want you to progress. I want to see you make this certain kind of progress. One of my favorite entrepreneurs, he calls in oftentimes on the show, you know, he's a great example of that, where he has followed through, a great example of not doing what I just described. He meets these guys, he pays to be in these conferences in New York or wherever. He'll meet these people, and every couple months, every month or so, he'll send them an update, here's my progress. And he hasn't just gotten them to write checks. He got them to write six-figure checks because they got so comfortable that he was going to be able to execute because he kept doing what he said he was going to do, and he stayed in touch. So they finally wrote checks. We have a company that we've been working with up out of Canada that's got this great piece of hardware, security hardware, and he has investors that come in again and again and again. They started with a $25,000 check, and they wrote another $25,000, they wrote another $25,000. They keep writing checks for him because he keeps doing what he said he's going to do, and he stays in touch with them. So you gotta understand that. So your strategy when it comes to accessing capital is get in front of investors, talk to those investors, you know, get in front of investors in every way you can, through your Rolodex, through any kind of free conference, through paid conference, because particularly in this day and age, right now, you have to get in front of the investors, okay? Wherever they are, you need to be where they are. The second thing you need to do is you need to make sure that you tell your story in a way, and you learn and you finesse and you practice and you get your story to the way an investor wants to hear it, and then you continue to perfect that. Then you stay in touch with those investors when they express an interest, so that when they finally decide, you know what, I'm feeling comfortable enough, or they'll decide to make an investment, when one or two things happen, either they feel comfortable enough that they're okay with writing a $25,000 or $50,000 check, they're not going to need to live on it, you know, for 3 months or something because, you know, whatever other things are going on, they're okay, they got that money. One of my advisors is, you know, he's got plenty, he's all liquid, he's got lots and lots of cash right now, but he's looking for the right deal. He's waiting to find the right entrepreneur that, you know, just that really shows that they got it going on. And he spent months doing due diligence with this one company, paying legal fees on a bunch of things and stuff like that, and finally just said no, you know. And so, you know, they'll get engaged, they'll look at deals, you know, when they finally make a decision to stroke that check, you want to be on top of the list. And the only way you're going to be on top of the list is to be the person that stayed in touch with them, gave them your updates, continue to establish a relationship. You didn't get impatient with them and their life and whatever was going on with their life and how they, you know, accomplished their deal. And then you're at the top of the list because they believe that you have the ability to execute. So it's gaining exposure and staying in touch with them. And so the other thing that will be a trigger event for them to write a check is the money becomes available and you're on the top of the list because they freed it up from something else, or they just finally got to know you well enough that they decided they were comfortable writing that check. So one of those two things is going to happen. So I want to encourage you to know that there is definitely the money that is out there. You just got to make sure you get in front of go where the investors are and be there and work it. And so we hope that we are still taking a call for companies for the Southeast Private Equity Conference. That is April 14th and 15th. You can get to your application on there. You can participate in one of two ways, as a table company in the Capital Expo or as a presenting company in the Innovative Company Showcase. All that information is on the seprivateequity.org website. Then the second opportunity is through our NBA and I Investor Forum on May 13th. And that information is on the launchfn.com website. So I'm going to go into the second phase of this talk, which is how do you set yourself apart from all the other companies that are going to be presenting or in front of these investors if they're, you know, actively looking at 20 different deals. How do you differentiate yourself? How do you set yourself apart? I'm going to go into that in this next segment. Part two, I'm going to play a little music interlude here for just a moment. Okay, this is Karen Ranz, host of the Southeast Private Equity Radio Show. It's where the Southeast private equity community comes together to learn how to create wealth through investing in companies and helping companies succeed, and how entrepreneurs create wealth by having great, successful companies. Always great to be a rich founder. The first part of this segment, we covered where do you go find the money in this today's market and how do you get in front of investors. And now I'm going to cover, now that you're in front of the investor, how do you make yourself stand out from the 20 other deals that are either pitching that day because you're at some kind of type of a conference, or because there's somebody that's looking at deals and they got 20 plans on their desk or in their inbox, and of, you know, your target investor, how do you stand out in the crowd? So one of the things, I do run a webinar called How to Pitch Investors, so I'm not going to cover all the content that I do in that particular segment, and you will be able to go to the website, the blog on this, entrepreneurblogspace.com, and I'm going to have some charts up there that compare a traditional 10-minute presentation with a 6-minute presentation. And so how can you, you know, what do you cover in a 10-minute presentation and what do you cover in a 6-minute presentation that should be able to help you in this? So the thing that you have to understand when you're doing any of these types of presentations, and the first and foremost, is that, and I'm going to talk a little bit about sort of the mistakes that companies make when they're doing these presentations, and then what are the most important things for you to cover, and then what is the, very specifically, what is in the content, the anatomy of a pitch. So the very first thing you must keep in mind when you're doing a presentation for investors, whether it's a one-on-one presentation and you have the luxury of 20 minutes, you know, to tell your story, or it's in a venture conference where you've got 6 minutes, is that you have got to satisfy the question that's in the back of their mind from the get-go is, how am I going to make money on this deal? How am I, Mr. Investor or Mrs. Investor or Ms. Investor, going to make money on this deal? That's all they care about. They want a pay raise. And more so important now than any other time, I mean, it's always been important to investors, but very important right now, is how am I going to get a pay raise on this deal, because my stock market is in the tank, my stock portfolio, my real estate investment holdings are down. I would need a pay raise. Okay? So you got to tell them how they're going to get a pay raise. So that's the very first question that's going to be on their mind, okay? And so when you're in the meeting, by the end of the meeting, what has to be very, very clear to that particular investor, that person in the audience, is that they want to know, why is there a need for your product? How and to whom are you going to sell it? How are you going to put money in the register? Why are you or your team the people to execute on this? Okay, this goes to the whole idea that an A product with a B management team will not succeed. I heard this. This is just amazing to me. I was at this meeting last night, and this investor who had invested in a company, she comes running up to me. It was crazy. There was like a line waiting, people waiting to talk to me. I never had that happen to me before. And this lady comes up to me. She's all excited about this deal that she's invested in. And so the CEO eventually kind of worked his way over to me, and we're talking, and turns out that he was like a number two or number three man in a company that was a company we had been working with to raise money. They had raised quite a bit of money, and they were kind of finishing out a round, and they come to us, and it turns out the company had gone Chapter 11. And I was shocked because it was incredible technology. It had been written up in Entrepreneur Magazine, all kinds of stuff, right? And what had happened was his next round of funding, he was getting like a venture capital round, but they would not invest as long as that CEO was in place. Not the guy that was talking to me, but the other guy. And I'm not going to name the company. And they wouldn't invest as long as because the team wanted to take the technology in a new direction, because it was in the digital media space of convergence of various platforms. And they had, and they was about to get leapfrog. And that was something I'd been thinking about in the last 6 months, because I hadn't really heard much from them. I was thinking, you know, their technology, there's so much new stuff happening, and I'm hoping they're staying up with it. I wonder how they're responding to it. And I had tried to reach the CEO. Now I know why he didn't return my phone calls. And so he was, his ego kept him from listening to the team that he had put around him, as well as the investors on the direction that he needed to go. And so what you ended up having, nobody really knew it at the time, but you ended up having a B management team with an A product that had potential great intellectual property to be a leader in the market going forward if they, you know, hadn't become stagnant. And so this new team has, taken it, applied for different patents, tweaked it, applied for new patents, and has taken it to market and won't be working with them. But A product, B management team, never works. It's better to have a B product with an A management team and will always work. And there's just many, many, many examples in history on that. So why are you the ones to execute on that? And if you don't, it's a whole other topic, but if you don't have that A management team, then you've got to have plans in place on how you're going to get there. At what point do you transition from your team and become a rich founder instead of a poor CEO to the new stellar team? You got to be able to explain what is the potential of the opportunity, and then number five, how does the ROI happen? Where do they get the return on investment? Is it in the shared revenue? Is it through the exit plan? And so when you're covering in a presentation format, you're using a PowerPoint. The five most common mistakes that a company will make is that they will use a sales presentation. They'll take a sales presentation, they'll waste so much time talking about the feature function benefit of the product, like it's a sales presentation to a client rather than talking about what an investor cares about. You're not selling the customer, you're selling an investor, okay? And then the second thing they do is selling the decision. They try to sell the decision to invest. Now, when you're doing a 20-minute, or you got 30 minutes and you got a captive audience of one guy sitting across the table, or you're a couple of people and you're, over lunch, or you're got them for coffee and you got a captive audience, fine. You go for the close because they have an opportunity to ask enough questions to know whether they want to, take it to the, yes, I would, based on certain things, I would be willing to invest. Yes, I have the money to invest. No, I don't have the money to invest, but I know some people. You can get to that point in that kind of a meeting. But anytime you're doing any of these conferences where you have a 10-minute presentation or a 6-minute presentation, then there's no way you can get to a yes in that meeting. So your goal out of that is twofold. Your whole goal, the primary, you have two things that are your goal from doing a pitch at any kind of a conference or an angel group where it's a cross-industry type of group, not a very, tight single focus group. Your goal in that is to get them to want to spend time with you to get more information. So you very judiciously plant seeds in your presentation that talk about that there's more to this. Not by saying, I don't have enough time to cover it, because that's lame. Everybody knows you don't have enough time to cover it. But you've got to say, we have a full comprehensive marketing strategy that includes, direct sales reps and, joint venture partners and, such as so-and-so who's already signed up, and we'll be happy to go through greater detail when we do our follow-up session with you. Okay? So you've got to be able to, get them to want to spend more time with you. One of the things that investors, and this goes to why you can do something in 6 minutes, is, and I'm digressing, and I'll come back to my number two goal of any kind of pitch, is that the when I first started taking over doing the angel investor forums, my intention was to do 20-minute presentations. And it was funny because I was fooled because I thought, how can people, people need 20 minutes. So I was at this conference. AEA is one of those groups that puts on a conference that doesn't cost much, but venture folks attended and venture companies present at it. They were doing 6-minute presentations. I couldn't believe it. I walked out and I went, was around the coffee with some of these VCs and angels that were there that I know. And I said, well, what is, I go, 6 minutes. How can y'all, isn't that amazing? How can they do anything in 6 minutes? And they laughed and they said, well, Karen, I decide, and this has been reinforced at so many panels of people I've talked to since then, but I decide in the first 10 minutes if I'm going to listen for the next 6 minutes. And if they can't tell me in 6 minutes why I want to spend more time with them, they can't tell me their story about why they're special in 6 minutes, they're never going to be able to tell it to me in 20. It's like, wow, never thought of it that way. You're right. right? And then sure enough, every one of these companies, because these were all very sophisticated companies, many of them had raised millions of dollars, they all did excellent jobs of telling their story in 6 minutes. I was floored. Of course, our regular angel investor event is a 10-minute presentation. The spec event is a 6-minute presentation, which is one of the reasons why I'm doing this. So that's one of the things that companies need to understand. And so they got to cut out the fat. And so then the second thing that happened was I went to one of these angel investors. I was invited by one of these angel investor groups to come and attend, and they were doing 20-minute presentations. Oh, my God, it was actually difficult to stay focused for 20 minutes, and I realized that's another reason why you do a short thing. You lose the focus of your investor audience. They zone out on you because you digress in something, you know, and so you keep their attention, and you can get it done in 6 minutes or in 10 minutes, and you're on it, then you're going to do great. So the second thing that you need to make sure, this is your goal out of the event, is that you want to create a buzz in the event. You want to create a buzz. And that means that when people walk away from that event, when those investors walk away, they're talking about what you're doing. They may or may not be interested themselves because it's not their industry or not their stage, but they understand what it is you're doing and that it's cool and that it has potential. I saw a couple of, out of the, gosh, what was it? It was 16 companies that presented yesterday. There's probably three of them that I remember right now, you know, that I could, like, talk about what it is that they do. Oh, man, there was a company that was really cool that was doing this whatever stuff, okay? You know, there was one company, you know, it was really interesting, and I think I'm going to Twitter on this. It was kind of like, wow, I can't believe nobody else has ever thought about that. And that's taking the power grid that is now serious old school and doing what we've done with computers for years, which is bringing all kinds of new technology into the power grid and making it more efficient. And so people use less power. It's better done by using silicon in it. It was amazing to me. I was thinking, I can't believe nobody else has thought about that. And all the engineering and all the re-engineering and all the computer enhancements that we've done and, you know, taking the power of computer and multiplying it and whatever that theory is, nobody's thought to do that with the way that the power grid is run. You know, that was it was brilliant. And there was a number of those like that. There was another one that was there was some biomeds companies that were just brilliant. And so you want people to walk away from those events talking about you, because your best source to get to that 600 that I talked about in my Cougarant Theory of Private Equity on raising capital and getting to enough investors, the ones that you want to be able to you want to be able to have those investors talk to other investors about your deal, so that when they're playing golf or they're doing whatever they're doing, where they're exposed to other investors, they talk about your deal. That other investor says, "Oh, that's kind of interesting. Can you give me some information on it, or can you connect me with that person?" So they're a great source to be able to take it to your next level. So what do you cover in your 6-minute presentation? In a traditional 10-minute presentation, it goes through, and this is according to the anatomy of a pitch provided by the Alliance of Angels. I've enhanced it in my Money Hunt presentation when we do the pitching investors webinar. But you start out, in your first 30 seconds, you're going to do the elevator pitch, your introduction. And then in the next 2.5 minutes, you're going to cover the problem, the solution, the traction in the marketplace. In the next 6 minutes, you're going to cover, the next 4 minutes or so, you're going to cover market size, who the customers are, what's your business model, and how you're going to go to market, your sales cycle, and kind of explaining that stuff. And then the next two minutes or so after that, you're going to cover your barriers to entry, your competition, who your partners and joint ventures are, who your management team, your advisory board. And then you wrap up in the last minute and a half with your financial forecast, your use of funds, and your offer. Okay, that's your typical 10-minute presentation. And so when you're doing a 6-minute presentation, and particularly when you're at one of these venture conferences, what you have to do, first of all, you are not going to do that when you do a use of funds and what your offer is, it's because you're in a closed door meeting with an angel group. where you've got to, because they have a membership and their relationship is established, you have by default establish a pre-existing relationship with those. Whenever you are doing any kind of venture conference where it is a large group of investors that have been invited to attend, our event's a little bit different because the spec event, we do require investors to fill out an investor profile. And only those with the investor profile are allowed in the room. But by rule of thumb, you need to not do your offer from stage because you have, first of all and foremost, violated one of the most sanctified rules of the SEC when it comes to private offerings and being having an unregistered offering, and that's doing a public solicitation for your offering. So you cannot do that, okay? Don't do it. What you can do is talk about, because everybody knows you're raising money, that's why you're there. And if you got a profile in the book, it probably has that in the book, they can read it, okay? But you're not saying it. You're not standing from a podium offering up what it is. I'm raising $1 million in $25,000 increments, and we have $300,000 left, and these are the terms. You get, you know, X amount of warrants. Don't do that, okay? What you want to do is you want to say, when we receive funds, we're going to use it in this way in order to accomplish this goal. Please visit us at our table, or please meet with me so I can talk to you more specifically on a one-on-one basis on you know, what our investment requirements are. Okay? That's the most that you want to say within that environment. So what do you want to cover in your 6 minutes? You're going to start with your elevator pitch. That is the most important thing. And you're basically within an elevator pitch. In the first 30 seconds, you're going to say, oh, you know, you're going to tell them how you are going to rock the world. We provide the most amazing XYZ widget that solves the such problem, and we already have, you know, X amount of revenue or X amount of customers, or we have, you know, major joint venture or whatever it is. You're, in a nutshell, what it is that you're doing, 30 seconds, okay? Because that's what gets their attention to say, you know what, I want to pay attention to this guy instead of flipping through my book and looking for the next thing or checking my messages on my iPhone. Okay, that's the moment that you capture their attention. So the next thing that you want to be able to do in this is you want to establish what is the pain. The next 45 seconds, you're gonna establish what's the pain that you're solving. There was a great presentation last night that did a really good job of this. His little write up was kind of boring. He was doing some kind of a new airborne package delivery kind of thing. And I'm thinking, man, there's, you know, a ton of those kind of stuff out there. but sure enough, he got up and he did his presentation. He had very few words on his charts. It was pictures, and his words were very powerful, and he did an excellent job, okay? So what is your pain? So you talk about the pain that you're solving. Why is there a need in the marketplace for what it is that you're doing? What is it not being done by the competition? So there's a legacy solution out there that you've got an innovative, you know, leapfrog over whatever legacy solution that's out there. There's a gap in the marketplace where there's no solution. There's other ones that do this part of it or that part of it, but nobody does either the full thing or this middle part of what you do, or it's what the competitors have missed. Maybe it's a segment of the market, whatever it is, okay? So within that, you've also kind of covered your competition by talking about the pain in the marketplace. So then your next minute, you're going to talk about the solution. What have you developed and what does it do? What is the function of it? There was a company there yesterday that has this. They've got huge traction. So obviously they've got something that was substantial. They've raised like $8 million from various venture capital firms, obviously something substantial. But I couldn't tell from their write-up in their thing or his presentation what they were doing. It was a new green energy kind of alternative fuel thing. Was it something, an additive that they added to the diesel, or was it a hardware device that they added to the catalytic converter? There was nothing in his presentation. I didn't get it. So what you have to do in your next minute is solve the solution. What is it that you've developed, and what does it do? And in a nutshell, how are you going to deliver it, and because why do they want it, right? So how are you delivering it through a direct sales channel? So it's your solution. Here's the pain. Here's why there's nobody solving this problem. Here's what we've developed to meet that pain and our solution, and we're going to get it to our client, our potential customer, and sell it this way. And then in your next minute, you're going to expand on that just a bit by talking a little bit more about how you actually, you know, how you are going to deliver it, what's the process of generating the revenue, and then that leads into your market opportunity, because we estimate that there's, you know, 30 million people that need this in the marketplace or whatever it is. Your market opportunity, which rolls right into your revenue forecast. So based on how we're going to sell it, the market opportunity, this is what we're forecasting over the next 3 or 4 years for our revenue. And it needs to not be a hockey stick, and it needs to be something that is gradual and realistic. And then it feeds into what your last minute where you review your the next minute where you review your forecast, your revenue forecast. You talk about raising funds so that you can use it wisely on marketing, infrastructure, and scaling your company to meet this demand and deliver on this performance numbers. You don't actually need to have bullet points on it. You know, because guess what? Every early stage company has to use money for the same thing. And so you're using funds, you're going to add to your management team, you're going to hire somebody that has a specific skill in this area, perhaps, you know, whatever it might be. And then how are you going to execute? What makes you be the one you're going to close out with your minute of your management to execute or key relationships and the traction that you've done? So to show that, you know, our management team is stellar, where you have people that come from this industry or that industry or this experience or has worked with this company and has opened doors to these things, and as a result, we have this major customer, we have 25 of these kind of customers, or we've just got into a joint venture with this company or whatever it is. There's something that validates your business model, and that's what you're going to sort of talk about, your management and your ability to execute or your board of advisors, and then you're going to summarize. So your summary is a recap of the pain you saw. So this is why you want to visit me after this, or you want to get together to learn more about this. We solved this problem in a way that's never been done before. There's no, you know, competition misses the mark in these areas, and we have this much revenue potential over the next 5 years, and you're going to, and our investors are going to share in our revenue growth and benefit when we exit or something like that. And I look forward to the opportunity to giving you more details about all of these things that I've talked about today. And that's how you do your 6-minute presentation. And that's when they will be excited at the end of that and say, wow, this company, not only does this guy master the messaging, he knows his story, and he's told me what I need to know, so I want to spend time with him. He's got a clarity of message, and I'm going to spend some time learning more about what that person does. They're going to write their name down. They're going to do that. They're going to make a note of your table. At the Southeast Private Equity Conference, you'll have your own table. They're going to go to table number 31 and talk to you. Okay, so that's what you want to do. That's how you make yourself stand out in the crowd. If you can explain those key things, bottom line is how it creates wealth for that investor, you will succeed. Volume, quality, follow-through messaging, okay? Volume of investors, be where they are. Be in front of the investors wherever they are, okay? And make sure that they're quality investors, the kind of investors that are right for you and your stage of company. Follow through with them and move them through the system. They're not going to throw checks at you just because. You've got to manage that process and move them through to close, just like you do a client. What else do you need? What else do you need to know before you can make a buying decision? And then make sure that your messaging is on target so that they understand how the benefit that they get out of investing in your company. And with that, you will be successful. And you will have an excellent opportunity to raise capital in this market. So this is Karen Rands with the Southeast Private Equity Conference and with the Southeast Private Equity Radio Show, Spec Radio. I encourage you to go to the SCPrivateEquity.org website and get all the information. And if you're one of the companies that's going to be presenting at the Southeast Private Equity Conference, because we're going to be encouraging everybody to listen to this, look forward to being with you at the pitch workshop, where we will finesse and fine-tune and make sure that your 6 minutes are the best that they can be, so you're going to increase your odds like you've never seen before. So tune in at seprivateequity.org. Thank you very much. Have a great day. Have a great Friday. This is Karen Rands. Talk to you later. Onward and upward.